welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast where we celebrate Scottish gardening. I'm MT O'Donnell, editor and producer of Scotland Grows magazine, and your host for this adventure. We are delighted that this series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home, tips from expert National Trust gardeners, and stories and histories of the Scottish plants protected and cared for by the National Trust, thus helping both your garden and National Trust for Scotland's gardens thrive. Chelsea Lowe is head gardener at Horatio's Garden Scotland, one of six UK gardens built by the charity to nurture the well-being of people after spinal injury in beautiful, vibrant sanctuaries within NHS spinal injury centres. Horatio's Garden Scotland, designed by James Alexander Sinclair, sits at the National Spinal Unit in the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, Glasgow. Chelsea facilitates garden therapy for patients and their families, harnessing the power of nature for wellness, and leads the volunteer team to care for this gorgeous space, which has such a positive impact on people's lives. If you haven't yet visited Horatio's Garden Scotland, this is another one to get on your bucket list. Chelsea, welcome to the Scotland Grows Show. Finally, I've been trying to pin you down for a chat for some months.
Yes, well, we're here now. Yeah, and it's great to be here.
As we said in the intro, you work for Horatio's Garden Scotland. And having visited many years ago, I can attest to the absolute magic of this garden sanctuary. So let's set the scene for listeners about the garden layout and about some of the planting in the garden.
Okay, yeah, so Horatio's Garden Scotland, for those that don't know, the Horatio's Gardens are therapeutic gardens in the heart of NHS spinal injury centres. We're a nationwide charity, so we have six active gardens at the moment throughout England, but of course there's only one spinal injuries centre in Scotland, and it's in Glasgow, and it serves all of Scotland. So if you have an injury anywhere in Scotland, you come to us in Glasgow. So it's even more important to have a beautiful garden sanctuary to escape into. Yeah, so our garden was designed and built in 2016. So it's 7 years old this September. Yeah, it's getting very beautiful and mature. It was designed by the acclaimed designer, James Alexander Sinclair, who is also one of our trustees. He's also with the RHS, I believe, as a judge. And he's just a great guy. He comes up and visits the garden. He's still very involved. The garden itself, it's got a lot of different components. It's got a beautiful woodland garden that's filled with birch trees and ferns. It looks great all year round. Our gardens they're sort of five-star garden experiences because the patients that come into the spinal injuries unit are often there from, you know, a few months to can be as long as a couple of years, which is a crazy amount of time to be in hospital. Yeah, so there's the woodland garden. We have a physiotherapy garden, which has wheelchair skills area, different gradients and stairs, gravel, so that when people are getting used to using a wheelchair, they can try out different terrain before they go off into this not very accessible world that we live in. We also have our therapy area, which is we've got a series of sort of modular, movable raised beds where we can work with patients and their families to grow things. That's always great. We have a beautiful greenhouse attached to our volunteer hub and my office, which is, it's great. It smells amazing when you walk into it. And I always joke that if it had a bed in it, I'd never go home. What else? The courtyard garden, which is, it's sort of the beating heart of Horatio's garden. It's central to the wards. So the woodland garden sort of runs alongside the spinal injuries unit, but the courtyard garden is really right in the middle. And it's got a fountain, it's lit at night. It has a fully accessible self-catering kitchen so that people can come out and make themselves a tea or coffee any time of day or night if they can't sleep and sit out and just enjoy the garden. We've got heated private glassed garden pods that people can get a bit of privacy in and sit out with their families, or just sit out and read a book and get some space from the wards. Often people are sharing a ward room with six other patients, so it's really valuable to have that space there, all surrounded by gorgeous planting.
It is, and I think that's one of the things I was struck by when the first time I visited, was just the plethora of spaces where patients go and spend time in outside the ward.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what the garden, it sort of functions as this counterpoint, and this, it brings in normalcy and seasonality into a situation that's really not normal for a lot of people. I mean, it's not normal to live in a hospital. It's life-changing to have a spinal injury. So people often have a before and after of that time in hospital, and we want to help make the after look so much brighter, because life can be really wonderful after a spinal injury, and there's so much that people can do that maybe they didn't even know that they could do before. You know, we have our art therapists come through and do mosaics and watercolor and cyanotype printing and all, you know, amazing stuff with the patients. And I think, you know, a lot of people are trying new things, and it's getting their minds off of the sort of medical, physical changes, things that they're dealing with, but, you know, bringing some joy and hope.
And Horatio's garden, the strapline is planting hope for people living with paralysis. And like you say, people can spend months in hospital. I think the average stay is around 5 months, but of course, as you said, people can be there for up to a year. They're facing real life-changing injuries. So you use the garden, don't you, for patients in more ways than one. So the garden is there as a space for them to just be in, but also you facilitate regular garden therapy sessions where patients enjoy purposeful garden activities.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm a few months in post, so I'm really just sort of spinning up to that. But so far, patients have been planting spring bulbs, doing a bit of weeding, which is, you know, that's an interesting different challenge if you're paraplegic. Or we've done flower arranging, pumpkin carving, yeah, just garden visits, aromatherapy. A garden is really, it's so many things, and there's lots of different ways that it can touch people's lives. So it's really patient focused and person centered. So depending on what a person's interested in or not interested in. The garden, it always has something. We grow a lot of fruit and vegetables so patients can harvest and share food, which is always, that really is a way to connect people. And we also work with the occupational therapists and the physio team. So with, when we do different activities, or if we've grown food, then they can take it into their hand therapy sessions and maybe cook with the potatoes that they've grown, or make a pizza with the tomatoes that they've picked out of the greenhouse. So it's neat. It's all really, it brings everybody together, and it's really sort of cyclical, and also connects people through to the seasons, because hospitals are quite weird limbo spaces and they're sort of timeless. But I think it's so important to see the leaves change and to see the spring bulbs come up and realize that there's more going on, and that you're connected into the bigger picture. You're not just stuck in hospital and, yeah, in this strange no man's land, you know, relearning maybe a new way to live life.
It's just an amazing place. So I guess that your day-to-day job at Horatio's Garden is extremely wide and varied.
It's vast. It's, yeah, all of it's wonderful, but such a layered job. I get to work with the volunteers, who the gardens would not run without them. They are absolutely integral. They're all, each and every one of them, wonderful, nuanced people that bring, you know, each their own little bit of joy and passion and creativity into the space. And they bring that also into the space with the patients and their families and with the staff. So they help to connect everybody. Yeah, I help liaise with the artists who are coming in, contractors. Yeah, and in between, hopefully get to do a bit of gardening myself, because I mean, I love it. And also, I'm lucky enough to get to work with James. and the design and help interpret, you know, his fabulous design and the little tweaks and adjustments he wants to make on the ground. So that's a real joy. And then, of course, the being a part of the greater Horatio's Garden charity. This morning, we were having a video tour of the garden in Northern Ireland, which they're just planting up today. So that's wonderful. And then also all of the just different activities that we run for the patients. So we have our Christmas fair, we'll do wreath making, fundraising. The charity as a whole, we have our carol concert in London coming up on the 7th. So yeah, that's very full on.
So there must be huge challenges for you, Chelsea, then, in balancing the need to keep on top of the gardening tasks to be overtaken in a garden which is visited and used every day, and to provide structured sessions for patients for therapy, and to look after all of the volunteers. So there must be huge challenges.
Yeah, prioritization, triage. I think having a young family, you sort of, I think as a parent, you learn a lot of that. I think, oh yeah, I've got a bit of life lessons. You sort of learn the cream rises to the top. You just sort of pick the jobs that are the most important or the most urgent and get through those and try and delegate, utilize all the wonderful people that you get to work with as much as you can, and appreciate them and just try and get it all done. But sometimes not all the balls stay in the air, and that's just life. But I think sometimes I see the bits of garden that haven't been weeded. Luckily other people don't, so I don't think I've ever had a patient or their family point out a bit of the garden and say, what's going on over there? They just think it's wonderful all the time. So that's great. That always makes me feel better if I feel like I'm falling behind the bus.
And is the garden open often for members of the public just to come along and visit? Or is that strictly by arrangement on several times over the year?
So we always have our public open day for Scotland's Garden Scheme, which we've already set for next year. It's the beginning of September. Outside of that, people are welcome to book tours either as a group or one-on-one with us to come through. But no, I mean, the garden is private to the spinal injuries unit. So because people are quite vulnerable at that point, you know, you do have to come through with somebody. But a great way to see the garden is to come and volunteer. And we're going to be doing a big volunteer push soon. Potentially people could come and volunteer and work with us either in the garden or with the artists or with the patients and get to see it year round, which is a real treat because it is absolutely stunning and it changes week to week.
The first time I visited was possibly early autumn, and I was absolutely struck on entry to the garden with just all the Verbena bonariensis, which lined the path on the way in, made its own little tunnel, and it was just overwhelmingly striking. And I think if people visit the garden, yeah, they want to get involved afterwards because they will then understand what that garden is giving for patients who are in long-term care.
Yeah, I think anybody that spent time in hospital, you know, even for a day or a couple of days, knows how tough and sort of isolating that can be. But the counterpoint of walking out from that space and into a garden, yeah, that's fabulous on its own. But also being able to see this wonderful garden year round, and also just all the ways that with the patients and their families and the staff and our volunteers and artists, it creates this wonderful sort of supportive web. It's amazing how it all works together.
So we know that being in contact with a natural environment contributes to an improved sense of well-being, which in turn has a positive effect on patient rehabilitation. In working there now in Horatio's Garden, does that make you now an even stronger advocate of implementing gardens across all healthcare settings?
I mean, definitely. I think I'm lucky enough to have worked with Horatio's Garden since 2019 because I did a practical horticultural traineeship there. And at the time, yeah, I was blown away just at how important that space is and how loved and how crucial. And it's a very stark contrast if you're ever in a hospital space or even when I go to my doctor's office. I think it's so important. I'm a huge proponent of gardens in schools, hospitals, hospices, for sure. One of the last places that I got to spend time with my mom before she passed was a garden that was just a little piece outside of a hospital as I, you know, wheeled her home for palliative care. And that was a really beautiful moment in memory, you know, around a really tough time of transition. So I think these spaces are integral. I think even just, you know, society as a whole, it's just so important. We need green spaces. We need them everywhere. And we need them to save the planet too. So up the trees.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, gosh, doctor surgeries is a bit of a bugbear of mine as well. You know, sick people are going into this physical space. There's nothing green to look at. We know the benefits of houseplants for even just filtrating the air. So we're all going to doctor surgeries with our bugs and our colds and our germs. And there's nothing there filtrating the air.
And it's good for the staff too. I mean, give them something, you know, everybody who doesn't love a houseplant. Luckily, I mean, it's one of the thing, you know, one of the positives that came out of this sort of post-COVID world is that I think people do understand a little bit better now of how important having nurturing green spaces can be, because they nurture us in return. And I think we're all part of that cycle. We don't want to be disconnected from it. Yeah, we need connection in so many ways. And I often think about where I feel most connected to other people. And that's usually in a garden or a green space or around a fire or a backyard. And who doesn't love just, you know, sitting out on a patio surrounded by flowers? There's not really a lot of drawbacks.
I don't know how you have any time outside of all of the work that you actually do there. But outside of Horatio's garden, what's your own garden like then?
My garden, I mean, it's jam-packed, full of plants. As you know, I did a show garden at Scone Palace this year, earlier in the year, which was wonderful. Some of those plants ended up at home with me. I don't think I've even got most of them put out yet. I also love to propagate. It's very addictive to make new plants out of, you know, just a cutting or a seed. So I've got all those little propagation experiments everywhere. But yeah, I took up my lawn a few years ago. It was the best decision I ever made. So it's just packed full of different perennials. I'm usually trying out new things. So it's a bit of a plants person's pick and mix. I think one of my favorite plants in there is I've got this beautiful rose, Rosa Julia Child, that smells like licorice. And that always reminds me of my mom. So, but yeah, it's a bit of a riot. I'm a mid terrace. I need more garden.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants, well, actually I don't now that I've got, you know, Horatio's garden, and I've also got a community farm that I'm a part of, so I could garden in my sleep if that was possible.
We could all do with a bit more garden space, but I'm going to ask you, as we've asked every guest on the podcast series so far, if you could only have three plants in your garden, which plants would you choose and why? And I know that's a really hard question.
Yeah, I knew this was coming because I've listened to some of your other wonderful guests. Oh,
it's a bit of a desert island discs.
I know. Yeah, and I love desert island discs.
Let's say you were starting all over again. You were only allowed to have three plants or trees or shrubs or whatever in your garden.
See, it's so tricky because I wrote up my list and then I realized that I don't know if I'd be allowed to have coffee if I didn't take... So out of desperation, one of them would have to be a coffee plant, but we'll assume that it's not about never having coffee again. So it's like those cheeky desert island discs guests that try to bring like a whole group of things. Can I have spring bulbs as a whole, or do I have to just pick one?
Let's just see where you go.
Okay. Well, cause spring bulbs, I mean, I feel like having designed quite a few gardens in my previous, when I was running my own business. Yeah, you just couldn't, I don't think, why even have a garden if it doesn't have that beautiful, wonderful succession of spring bulbs? And also because I'm a transplant, so I'm Canadian originally, but having also lived in Australia, I don't know if people in the UK know how good they have it. I mean, the spring bulbs here are magnificent. I mean, the Bluebell Woods, and how you have snowdrops sometimes even in December. But I think if I had to narrow it down from that, I would choose Narcissus, because you can really get, I mean, you can get 3 to 4 months if you plant it right, and you can plant, you know, from the big, beautiful, blousy, crazy double narcissus all the way to the little dwarf tete-a-tetes. Yeah, and you can go from February, maybe even January, all the way to April. So that would definitely be one of them. I would definitely want an Acer pomatum. I love autumn. I love the seasons changing and feeling that. I've always loved that crispness of autumn and the falling leaves and seeing the leaves on the ground. But I think I'd also take an Acer because I want something that'll grow old and sort of twisted with me. A plant that I can see getting all sort of wiry and, yeah, rough barked. So I'd probably...
You picked a plant as a self-portrait, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's all a mirror. It's all a reflection of us. I used to work at this university in Canada that had these gorgeous heritage Japanese gardens. And I was a photographer then, and you could go right inside these 100-year-old acers and look up into the canopy. And I would photograph them, try and get a sense of that feeling of being encapsulated by this Japanese maple, as we call them in Canada. Yeah, and it was tough to capture in a photograph, but I love that feeling of being inside a tree or having it wrap around you. And with acers, if you plant them sort of up on a slope and you can look up into them, yeah, there's nothing more beautiful, I think. And then the third one was tough because I love big trees. So I love oaks and I love copper beech. But I think if I had to just take one more, I would maybe take Astrantias. Because the master warts of other people, they also have other funny little names like melancholy gentlemen, I think they get called. But I've always loved them. I think before they were even really on my radar. I remember seeing one, taking a photograph of it, and they're really fractally. Like you can look inside them and they're quite symmetrical. They're really dainty, but well-behaved, but you can keep seeing little nuances, color on the tips of the bracts or the way that they come up or when they unfold. Yeah, and there's lots of different color variations. I think they hybridize as well. So you make your own if you plant a few together. So I think I would take those.
They're a really nice plant to look at up close, aren't they? From a distance, yeah, you get the color and sometimes it's subtle and muted, but up close, they just a little microcosm of a world in themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, and they don't, I mean, they're pretty well behaved. They don't need staking. They look great in winter, just as a bit of structure. They pair well with other plants. Yeah, there's not really too much of a drawback. Their foliage doesn't crowd other plants, which I always like because I've just got usually putting way too many plants in too small of a space. So... It's good if they're not too much of a thug, but they do spread around. So, you know, you're not ever just trying to resuscitate them, which is good.
Well, that would be nice in your ideal garden. Then you would have, you know, shade and structure and autumn color from your Acer. And then you would have a riot of spring color with all your daffodils. And then you would have all the form and the shape and the muted colors of the Astrantia too. So that would be a really nice tree to sit under and a nice garden to look out on.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
So you wouldn't have your coffee. That's okay.
You know? Oh, my coffee. None of it would happen if I didn't have coffee.
So with your role now, Chelsea, as head gardener at Horatio's Garden Scotland, and all of the wealth of experience that you have before coming to this role in garden design, garden maintenance, and everything you've done, what would be the best advice you would give to new gardeners?
People that are brand new to gardening, they're usually already very passionate. So I would say just try anything, you know, just don't be shy about it. So if you're curious about pruning an apple tree, just find one that you can experiment on. If if you want to grow garlic, even if you don't have the space, yeah, just figure out a way, you know, tag in with a community farmer. You know, find someone that's older that needs help with their allotment. It can be tricky, I think, in Glasgow because all our allotment spaces are oversubscribed and there's a lot of young, keen gardeners that don't have room, but the space is out there. You know, often I think people in tenements they're shared to have somebody gardening the back court, but I don't think anybody ever minds if you're making something more beautiful or growing herbs that everybody can cut and use. So as long as it's, you know, if you sort of think community minded, just get out there and give it all a shot. Because I think with gardening, the beauty of it is that you learn while doing it, and you can get unlimited, wonderful gardening books from your charity shop. So just get out there and give it all a try and just learn as you go and yeah, find other people to garden with, because it's so social. It's fun if you can do it with other people too. Come volunteer with us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great, great shout out to go and volunteer in Horatio's garden, because not only will you learn so much from your time volunteering, but I just think you'll be moved in so many other ways, because exactly as you said, gardening is such a social activity. It can be a solitary activity if you want it to be, and yes, there's a time and a place and a real sanctuary in that, but also it's a wonderful activity to do as part of a community, as part of a group. We kind of grow people as well as growing plants.
And grow ourselves, yeah. Grow as a community. Yeah, it's all a web, so just get out there. I don't know anybody that's ever started gardening and regretted it. Yeah, give it all a shot.
So you mentioned earlier as well that you trained under the Practical Horticultural Apprenticeship with the WFGA. What advice then would you give to anyone listening who perhaps wanted to start a career in horticulture, whether that's straight out of school or whether that's career changers? What advice would you give to people wanting to get into a career in horticulture?
Well, I think it's don't feel limited. I mean, if you've got a certain circumstance that makes a traditional educational route not fit for you, don't be put off. So that was me. I'm a career changer. As I said, I was a filmmaker and photographer before, although I've always gardened. I'd never really thought of it as a career. And then after I had my daughter, I didn't really see myself going back to a desk job. I just wanted to be outside more. And I was so passionate about gardening, so I sort of curved into that. But because I had a very young child, I couldn't really commit to the standard full-time education, even the online, you know, where you had to go and do, you know, part of your time. For me, it would have been over in Edinburgh. That would have meant spending a couple days over there in the week. And that didn't really work for me because we don't have our families in Canada. So I couldn't just leave her with the grandparents. But there's so much out there now. There's lots of great online courses. There's lots of great practical traineeships that are more flexible. You can volunteer. You can find a mentor. Find something that fits your lifestyle. And yeah, just go for it and just learn as you go and tee up with other people. It's such a giving community. I mean, gardeners they're just great, friendly people. So you cannot, you know, there's lots of different ways and everybody helps each other out. There's, you know, Gardener's Question Time. There's Scotland Grows podcast and magazine. It's endless, really.
It's never too late to get involved in changing into a career in gardening, or even just doing more in gardening, just giving of your time, doing more volunteering, maybe mentoring younger people trying to get into gardening. There's so many opportunities. It's so vast. It's exciting.
It's so vast. And it's not just one thing. Therapeutic horticulture is, if you're passionate about people, but you don't want to garden full time, then that's a different approach. I think, yes, like I said, school gardens, I think are fabulous. So if you've got young kids, you know, getting involved with your school garden and getting that up and running, the RHS has great school gardening programs. And I think that's hugely amazing work to get young kids appreciating the world around us. And I think that's going to make a huge impact because they're going to have to take the reins of everything that's going on the planet. What can't you do in a garden? So just make it your own. And just if that's what you want to do, just start doing it. Start today.
Yeah, and that is a fantastic place to finish, Chelsea. What can't you do in a garden? I might caption that and use that as a quote from you, a little tribute.
Well, some people might come back and say, well, this wouldn't work in a garden. You might get some funny responses, but
in general, what can't you do in a garden?
I mean, there is World Naked Gardening Day, so I guess nothing's off limits.
There is, and I do promote it every year. You know, it's up to people. It's your private, if it is your private space, it's not always your private space, but if your garden is your private space, what you want to do in your garden, then we'll quote Chelsea from now on. We'll say, well, it's World Naked Gardening Day, and Chelsea says, what can't you do? So you might be inundated soon.
It's true.
Oh, well, Chelsea, thank you so very much for sharing a little bit of time with me today. I know how busy you are, particularly now in bulb planting season and everything that you have to do at Horatio's Garden and being just newly in post a couple of months ago. So it's been a real pleasure to talk to you and to hear more about the work that you do there. And I literally cannot rate it highly enough and encourage people to go along and visit and just get involved with seeing the way that gardening is actually really helping people.
That's right. Well, thanks so much for having me on. It's a pleasure chatting with you as always. Hopefully chat with everybody again soon.
Yeah, we'll hopefully catch up with you soon. Thanks so much, Chelsea. Then speak to you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Scotland Grows Show. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter or LinkedIn. And sign up for our mailing list so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you are not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows magazine, 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds and in the show notes for each episode. The information on the National Trust for Scotland's Root subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and designed landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.